Welcome to the Unmuted Podcast from Los Angeles. I'm Jay Mariotti. When they tell the story of why baseball died in America, it will include the dangerous, foolish, and fraught attempt to restart the sport amid a raging pandemic. When the owners and the so-called commissioner, Rob Manfred, have allowed baseball to devolve into clumsy, dawdling irrelevance as it is, why would anybody have any faith that Major League Baseball could pull this off without coronavirus outbreaks? Already, just days into the season, the pandemic is causing chaos for the sport, with at least four teams in coronavirus breakout mode and more teams fearing that they are next. The Miami Marlins became the first to postpone a home game after at least 14 players and coaches, 14, have tested positive for the virus. If the players have to quarantine for several days, tell me, do the math. How does MLB continue a Marlins season? How does MLB continue an MLB season with 29 teams or 26 or 17 or 10 or at this rate, 4 or 5? The Marlins had to remain in Philadelphia, where the Phillies also consequently had to cancel a game against the Yankees, and suddenly we have to wonder about the ballpark in Atlanta, where the Marlins played an exhibition game last Wednesday, may have caught the virus there. That's where the Braves, including their star Freddie Freeman, have had positive tests. In other words, baseball is losing this whack-a-mole game. So what's the point of continuing on anyway? If the Marlins, Braves, Cincinnati Reds, and Washington Nationals, remember Juan Soto, opening night, positive test, if they already have COVID-19 issues, what is to say that players throughout the sport, both leagues, every team, will not be infected before we know it? Of course, the Miami area is one of the most contagious hotspots in the world, an epicenter thanks to the COVIDiots in the state of Florida. And when the Marlins hit the road, that's where their manager, Don Mattingly, says they feel the most vulnerable. But are they taking that virus from Miami to the road, or did they catch it in Atlanta, or did they get it in Philadelphia? For the last 5 months, we've been asking these sort of questions with no answers. And here you have their manager, Don Mattingly, saying this is the problem. They were on the road. Well, what, you feel better going back to South Florida right now? This was a very bad idea, unlike the NBA, which is trying to construct a medical bubble situation in Orlando. Baseball decided, actually, the players wanted this, to play in stadiums and then go home at night or back to hotels at night instead of trying to create a medical bubble. But the worst idea of all so far was even playing a game in Philadelphia on Sunday to begin with. The Marlins, after realizing four of their players, including their starting pitcher, had tested positive, should not have played the game. Major League Baseball should have stepped in and put a stop to it, but no, they're too busy counting their money. And the players are stubborn. They think, as alpha males, that they can tough it out. We'll beat this virus. Gentlemen, little boys, COVID-19 is bigger than all of us, even you. And that goes for Mattingly, who seems to think he's an infectious disease expert. You know, we never thought about not playing the game. Again, why are they doing this? Risking lives. Wealth over health. Please stop this social and medical experiment now. So the owners lose a few billion bucks. They can afford it. Do you want a death on your hands, Mr. Manfred, or do you not care? I don't think the owners really care. Right now they're going, oh my God, am I going to be able to buy that fifth house this summer? Oh no. Which got me to thinking, they never ask the fans, do they? Sports wants your life, your eyeballs, your disposable income, your firstborn, and your unconditional loyalty through scandals and labor standoffs. But when an existential crossroads arrived in the devilish summer of 2020, how, when, and why sports should resume, did anybody even ask you what you thought? say how you might feel if mere days into the MLB restart, there already is grave concern that COVID-19 will end the season barely before it started. Yes, the games are back, the broadcasts are back, the commercials are back, the malcontents are back, including Lou Williams, who bolted the Disney World bubble for a family matter that involved a rapper, a photo, an Atlanta strip joint, and the risk of contracting and spreading the coronavirus and sabotaging the NBA season in that bubble. The referee baiting is back in the NBA. The juiced up home runs are back in MLB. Alex Rodriguez is back, tragically so. Even the frat boy code is back, with the Cubs and the Brewers engaging in dugout emptying trash talk, oblivious to a virus that still rages across America and obviously will continue to impact bubble-less MLB. Yet, through the early blur of sports' very doubtful resumption, let's pause, take a breath, and ponder this. Can we honestly declare that sports are finally back, and that goes for the NBA as well, later this week, as rhapsodized in a Bud Light ad that runs about as often as A-Rod flubs a fact, when the spectators are not back? As an entertainment function, is this not closer to the Walking Dead than an exercise gauged by daily standings? Are these stadiums and arenas, or are they sensory deprivation tanks? Maybe the NBA will succeed in its bubble, though the Williams stunt suggests that players will ignore protocols and pop that bubble with their immaturity. It's absurd to think about playing football in college, football in a sport with no social distancing, where locker rooms will have the same issues as we've seen in baseball, petri dishes. For now, all eyes are on the death sport of baseball, where Kanye West has a better chance of becoming president of the United States than Major League Baseball has of surviving COVID-19.
This is the Pandemic Proof Podcast with Jay Mariotti, an actual journalist who covered the Bay Area earthquake long after a World Series was postponed, and on 9/11 successfully demanded to keep hosting his national radio show when an advertising boss wanted to switch to network programming. Did you really think Jay ever would stick to sports during a global health crisis? Now, here's Jay Mariotti.
Whether it's Major League Baseball opening in spookily desolate parks, or NBA players swallowed by court-length neon LED boards inside a video chamber, the absence of energy is numbing. This is the point in time when everybody should be acknowledging that fans, always the bastard children of the industry, are indeed vital to the live event experience and never should be taken for granted again. For as long as I've been writing and commenting on sports, fans have been perceived as necessary evils, tolerated by athletes and coaches, trivialized by media, and patronized by owners who periodically toss the stock go-to bouquet. Our fans are the best in the world. But after taking in underwhelming low-buzz scenes and what should have been electric moments, I heard faint echoes of celebration after Matt Olson ripped a walk-off grand slam in Oakland, or that Wrigley Field slumber as Kyle Hendricks finished off a complete game shutout. It's obvious no amount of piped-in crowd noise or life-sized cardboard cutouts can put lipstick on the pandemic pig. Here was that Hendricks scene in Chicago.
All right, so Hendricks against Hira. I think that visit also indicates probably one more batter. Hendricks hoping he can get this out and get out of here with a win, and that's going to happen. Cubs win. Cubs win. Kyle Hendricks shuts out the Milwaukee Brewers on three hits, all from the number nine hitter, the only base runners they had all night.
We don't want to hear balls banging off the green monster. We want to hear Red Sox fans thrilled that balls are banging off the green monster. We don't want to hear Max Scherzer grunting, "God damn it," as Giancarlo Stanton launches a mistake pitch almost 460 feet, we'd rather hear the groans of national fans and the roars of Yankee fans. Listen to Mad Max after the crack of the bat. You'll hear it just for a bit.
accomplishing much of anything. Frustrating season for Stanton, indeed. Stanton with a drive out to left center field, and just like that, the Yankees have jumped in front. 2-0, New York!
Said Aaron Judge, Stanton's fellow Bronx Bomber, quote, "When Stanton hit the ball out of the stadium, you kind of miss hearing those oohs and ahs, you think? And if Kike Hernandez delivered a memorable quip about kid Dodgers pitcher Dustin May, and I'm quoting, he wasn't nervous or intimidated by the amount of cardboard we had in the stands tonight," said Hernandez. "Come on, I want real butts in those seats, not cartoonish mannequins that mock what the men in the uniforms are taking seriously." So admit it, sports. The fans not only are missed dearly, their involuntary sabbatical has undeniably diluted the return of games in America. The sounds, the smells, the buzz, the beer, the concourses, the cityscapes. Without the surrounding vitality, what is this exactly? The pandemic has robbed sports of its spark, its essence. And if you don't believe it, consider the weirdness at Wrigley Field over the weekend. Know how cool it was to see Cubs first baseman Anthony Rizzo offer a splash of hand sanitizer to Milwaukee's Orlando Arcia, who accepted? Well, the mood quickly grew feisty as Rizzo was plunked in his next at-bat in what became a succession of purpose-pitched tit-for-tats over two games, leading Cubs star Javi Baez, who had been hit on the arm, to jump over the dugout railing. Next thing you knew, Brewers outfielder Lorenzo Cain was saying he doesn't care about MLB protocol prohibiting fighting during the pandemic, that he'll be ready to rumble regardless of social distancing violations. Yikes. Here was Brewers manager Craig Counsell.
"Well, I think this is going to be part of this season. I mean, both dugouts can hear each other, and, you know, umpires can hear everything, and so it's... You know, there's talking that goes on in a game. You never hear it with all the fans here, and right. it's part of the game. It's competitiveness. It's all it is."
A part of me wants to hear that talking, but in this case, I miss the fans much more. I've been at Wrigley during on-field fracases and without fury in the stands, fueled by differences between large market Chicago and an inferiority-ridden town 90 miles to the north. This sort of felt like a bar argument across the street at the Cubby Bear. The fans weren't screaming. It was just a lot of players staring each other down. No doubt the visuals are uplifting right now in sports, if not historical and miraculous. We are watching the world's greatest athletes competing again in famed stadia and dazzled up gyms in Orlando. We are mesmerized once more by Mike Trout, LeBron James, and would you believe, Yoenis Cespedes? NFL camps are opening this week somehow, though the league remains a long shot to survive COVID-19. The NBA bubble really starts to blow up this Thursday without Williams. The NHL igloos, that's what they should call them, not the bubbles, the igloos, launch in Canada a few days later. Golf, soccer, NASCAR, and the lunacy spun by Dana White have been online for weeks. And didn't we all laugh and crack wise when Dr. Anthony Fauci nearly hit the Washington Monument with his ceremonial first pitch, which he could have attributed to an act of physical distancing, right? If he wasn't busy explaining why he wasn't wearing a mask while watching the game in the barren stands. No!
And John, I understand, I think this is sort of mischievous with this thing going around. I had my mask around my chin. I had taken it down. I was totally dehydrated, and I was drinking water, trying to rehydrate myself. And by the way, I was negative COVID literally the day before. So I guess people want to make a big of that. I wear a mask all the time when I'm outside to pull it down, to take some sips of water and put it back up again. I guess if people want to make something about that, they can.
You know what? Fauci is starting to make me very nervous. In so many unimaginable ways, there is a renewed and refreshing sense of familiarity, if not normalcy. And even if the virus sabotages leagues and shuts down seasons before they end, at least we were privy to glimpses. Still, this is not sports as we know it, nowhere near it. A game cannot be played in a studio like the taping of a TV sitcom. What makes it explode is the convergence of humanity. Lavishly compensated athletes and the fans who cheer slash boo them within an emotionally charged pit. Some teams are going big on booming music and effects, such as the La La Land Dodgers, who had organist Dieter Rohl blast out Welcome Back and let him rev up fitting tunes during the lull periods. Zombie, remember that tune? Zombie, 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 That's old. Or Depeche Mode's Enjoy the Silence, which you will hear later. Tropicana Field, Tampa Bay, actually sounded louder with no fans, thanks to revved-up gimmicks, than it does amid the smattering of people who show up for Rays games. Other teams have opted for the sounds of silence, with the Nationals choosing not to use organist Matthew Van Hoose, who then moved his Viscount organ to a nearby Buffalo Wild Wings, where only a couple of voices in a sparsely populated bar sang along to Take Me Out to the Ball Game. That's pretty sad. In Houston, the organist foolishly played the opening beats of an age-old rally starter. Da-da-da-da-da-da! When nobody was in the stands to yell, charge. So it went, da-da-da-da-da-da! Nothing. Turns out the resumption of sports is not a diversion from the virus. It's a creepy, incessant reminder of life as we've never known it. Here's Dodgers third baseman Justin Turner talking about the fans in Los Angeles.
For fans, on speaking on your guys' behalf, I know it's going to be tough. It's going to be even more nerve-wracking having to sit at home and watching TV than it already is if you were at the games and watching from your seats. And, you know, on behalf of our fans, Dodger fans, who I firmly believe are the best fans in all in baseball, and they show out every year, and we lead the league in attendance, and, you know, I live in L.A. year-round, and no matter where you go, no matter what month it is, you see Dodger gear everywhere. You know, Rose, you live around here. So for the fans, I just hope it's enjoyable. I guess the irony in it for Dodger fans is that we got our TV deal done this year. So the good news is that even though you can't go to the game, at least everyone – in Los Angeles, we'll be able to see us for the first time in, what has it been, 8 years. So yeah. We're definitely excited about that.
Baseball's 60-game regular season and the NBA's seeding games plus postseason sprints both have shotgun feels. But the novelty of sports in a pandemic, which could be a sequel to Snakes on a Plane, will give way at some point to a slog, maybe an unwatchable slog. How will the players find motivation? How many will want to bolt the bubble like Williams, who not only must serve a 10-day quarantine and miss 3 regular season games for a messy Clippers team that was thinking about a title, but now has hundreds of players worried that he caught the virus in a strip joint in Atlanta, even if he claims he was just eating dinner there. Lou says that's his favorite place to eat dinner. Lou, can I tell you there are 1,000 better places to eat in Atlanta than inside a strip joint? And how will the poor fans, confined to their homes right now, remain engaged enough to keep watching on TV? Just because the games are back doesn't mean they're all going to be well played, right? I've seen some dogs already. And won't baseball get boring in a hurry because the players still are not in a hurry? Now more than ever, MLB should be quickening the pace of play so players have minimal time at the ballpark to reduce health risks. So why were players in damp uniforms cramming together in clubhouses during a 2-hour rain delay in D.C.? Couldn't you just feel the coronavirus sort of forming? These cramped clubhouses? What? Why not just examine the Doppler radar and quickly declare Gerrit Cole and the Yankees as winners, which eventually happened anyway? And why did we see a summer camp exhibition game last almost 4 hours? Oh, for the same reason Major League Baseball suddenly thinks it has solved the COVID-19 crisis by simply downplaying it and pretending a positive test is an ankle sprain. Yep, Juan Soto, only the best player in the lineup of the defending champion Nationals, tested positive for the virus last Tuesday, meaning he was exposed to teammates during an exhibition game that evening, then worked out with the same teammates Wednesday before learning of his positive sample the next day. Only 2 weeks earlier, Nationals general manager Mike Rizzo had ripped MLB for lengthy delays in testing results. Now, Rizzo was uttering cringeworthy sports jargon. Quote, next man up, let's go, Rizzo said. Oh, ugh.
You know, I think you have to take a business as usual type of approach to it, just like any other injury during the season. So I think that's really the way we kind of attacked it this morning. This is part of preparation for baseball in 2020. We're going to have to learn how to adjust to these things. And I think that the team that really does the best job of keeping their star players on the field and keeping them healthy is got a better chance of winning than the other teams.
Actually, you didn't have to play ball, Mike Rizzo. MLB could have postponed the game and avoided another potential crisis. Nationals personnel that had been exposed to Soto then were exposed to Yankees personnel. Now, all Nationals players tested negative following Soto's positive, the team said, but should we believe that? Why would Major League Baseball, which lies about everything, be truthful about an outbreak that instantly would trigger cries to shut down a team or an entire season? Too much money at stake, so they'll be hiding this stuff. I'm watching them. Nationals, Braves, Reds, every day brings a new team with a COVID-19 problem, causing players to miss valuable time in a shortened season. Said Braves star Freddie Freeman, already having survived an evil corona bout, quote, there's no such thing as a common cold anymore. If you have symptoms, this is what's going to happen. You're going to miss several days. Not just us, it's going to happen to probably every single team. Freddie Freeman. MLB isn't acting that way, though. The coronavirus is back here somewhere. The games are back on. Yeah, all right. Just stay tuned. We're just starting this experiment. This health experiment, science experiment, sociological experiment. But hey, ESPN is desperate for programming, knowing the opening night telecast would average a big number, 4 million viewers. I watched, you watched, and thus deflect headlines from the daily Bristol soap operas, and there are many. And MLB was backburnering the virus to push its business envelope, daring to announce an expanded postseason. Yeah. Right in the middle of the coronavirus. That's about the second wave, but we're going to have an expanded postseason. The so-called commissioner, Rob Manfred, didn't want the positive test of a star player reopening the central questions on opening night. Why are you playing baseball during a pandemic? And why are you playing at 5 ballparks in California where testing sites such as the one at Dodger Stadium are dealing with crippling supply shortages? And while on that topic, why is Manfred letting players break protocol with post-victory hugs, close dugout proximity, and arguments between managers and umpires? At least they're wearing masks for now. Does Manfred realize many of America's 4 million COVID-19 patients are bothered by serious symptoms for months, if not years? That includes people in their 20s and 30s, the age groups of almost all MLB players. Or is Manfred too busy accepting congratulatory phone calls from the owners and the networks? The players say they're up to the monumental challenge of dodging the virus and trying to win games in quietude. But no matter how young, strong, and resilient they are human beings also. They thrive on fan noise and interaction. What if they wilt and burn out? Derek Jeter, the Marlins CEO, Remember when he was a New York icon, he was saluted by regular fan chants in the first inning at Yankee Stadium. He said the team that is the most focused will win the championship. It's not going to be the Marlins, probably not in his lifetime. Sean Doolittle of the Nationals, their closer when they won it all, he says it's going to be a real challenge when they settle into the regular season. Quote, what happens when you get into the rest of August and you start to fall into that routine? There's so many times you get into those dog days of summer and there's a monotony. It starts to get really monotonous. And there are nights when the fans really carry you through the game. They help you through an outing. They help you snatch a come-from-behind victory. End quote. Doolittle. See? The fans. We miss the fans dearly. One gimmick that will not help any of us is Fox Sports' computer-generated virtual crowd. Animation-based technology allows the network to control how fans react. I guess 500 possibilities from a high five to the dreaded wave. Also, how they're divided in percentages in the stands, team allegiances, and even how they're dressed according to the weather.
This is what Wrigley Field looks like in the current state. Social distancing, no fans. Oh, look at this! Just like that, fans are packing the stands. We can change the jerseys of the fans. We can give them some emotion. Listen, it's not going to look or sound like what you're used to. We're not fooling you. This is just to make it a little bit more normal once in a while. Embrace the weird is what I say about this 2020 season.
I'd be more impressed if Cletus the Robot joined A-Rod and Terry Bradshaw in a mascot race. I should be careful what I wish for. When Fox is not airing NFL content, it's kind of a non-player in sports TV these days, forcing bosses to rely on attention-grabbing stunts. What's peculiar is that the first several rows behind home plate and most other sections are empty, giving a true impression of a barren ballpark until we see these virtual imposters squeezing together in other sections. Of course, none are wearing masks or socially distancing. I am quoting Fox executive Brad Zager. Quote, it's not like we are trying to make people feel like there is a crowd there. Well, then what are you doing? What exactly is the purpose? As usual, the NBA has a better chance of getting it right, turning three Disney facilities into TV experiences. Still, despite music, a barking PA announcer, and defense chants, I even heard hit the road, Jack, when Alex Caruso fouled out of the game the other day, along with creative camera angles and practical innovation for home viewers, the bubble, in spite of all that, dearly misses the energy that defines any NBA game night. Hopefully, Commissioner Adam Silver scraps the idea of 300 virtual fans watching games on 17-foot video boards. Just picture that. Even if they do include players' family members. Nice touch, but come on. 300 fans? Creepy. You're LeBron, you're dribbling down court, and you're looking over somebody there in a face. Ah! Ah! Hey, Adam Silver, see... dumb Fox idea, okay? See it and get rid of this, please. The NBA might yet create a miracle in Orlando, but it can't recapture its common arena experience, said the Clippers' Joakim Noah. There's no crowd energy, so the energy is going to have to come from the players. Look, I get it. Leagues and broadcast networks are trying to survive a horrific, unprecedented catastrophe. If they manage to complete even half the games the rest of the year, I will be amazed. I just want everybody to know, executives, athletes, TV people, everybody, that it wasn't only about you all of these decades. It was about the fans, the paying customers, the ones that keep you in business and support your wealthy lifestyles. And you might want to thank them for continuing to pay attention amid a pandemic instead of trotting out virtual crowds and cardboard cutouts that only seem to insult the fans. They say audio reading is the new way to explore a book, so here is my latest column from the Barrett Sports Media site titled Making the National Anthem Great Again. Francis Scott Key, a lawyer who dabbled in epic poetry, wasn't inspired to write what became the Star-Spangled Banner so Mark Cuban and Ted Cruz could politicize it in a Twitter battle. He authored it knowing the U.S. had withstood a British naval attack on Fort McHenry, where, by the dawn's early light, a flag of 15 stars and 15 stripes flew triumphantly through the perilous fight at Baltimore Harbor. His words were intended to reflect pride, unity, fortitude, hope, but 206 years later, our national anthem has become the symbol of an ugly confrontation we do not need in a divided and churning America. The media moth Cuban, who might be mounting a late run for office beyond his ownership of the NBA's Dallas Mavericks and his Shark Tank advice duties, happens to believe, as I do, that athletes should kneel or stand, do what they please, during the pregame playing of the Star-Spangled Banner if they so choose. But Cruz, the Texas Republican who kneels at the feet of President Trump, does not agree. Nor does Mark Davis, a Dallas-based talk host who started this battle by tweeting, and I'm quoting Davis, "I am so ready to be in on this year's Mavericks homestretch. So much promise, so much personality. But the minute one player kneels during the anthem, I am out." Capital O-U-T. Surely at M. Cuban can lead the way for at Mavs, at NBA, to do whatever gesture they wish without insulting the nation. Also with Davis, football great Mike Ditka, who issued a warning to those who kneel during the anthem.
If you can't respect our national anthem, get the hell out of the country. Then that's the way I feel. Of course, I'm old-fashioned, so I'm only going to say what I feel. I think there's a way that you protest, and there's a way you don't protest. You don't protest against the flag, and you don't protest against this country, who's given you the opportunity to make a living playing a sport that you never thought would happen. So I don't want to hear all the crap.
Now, Cuban should have left it alone, rejecting Davis as another conservative radio guy with a gasoline can. But it is not humanly possible for Cuban to shift into low gear on any subject. So he replied to Davis, quote, "The national anthem police in this country are out of control. If you want to complain, complain to your boss and ask why they don't play the national anthem every day before you start work," end quote. Mark Cuban. With that, we were subjected to another nauseating flap that compelled me to ponder the unfathomable question. Is it time to stop playing the national anthem at sports events until America shows it deserves it? When an 1814 song isn't even sacred amid the toxic fumes of rhetoric, what is? Cruz started it, firing a Cuban, really, with a bunch of question marks and exclamation points. NBA is telling everyone who stands for the flag, who honors our cops and our veterans, to piss off, in Texas no less. Good luck with that. That was Cruz to Cuban. Now Cuban responding. Have some balls for once, at Ted Cruz. Speak to me. It's my tweet. Cruz. Yes, Mark, my communication and tweeting out my response to the world was meant somehow to keep it a secret, because you're very scary. I'm a Rockets fan, but more than happy to cheer on the Mavericks. It's sad to see you telling so many Texans to piss off. More Cruz. Speaking of balls, tell us what you think about China. I'll wait. More Cruz. Still no answer from at Mark Cuban. Let's try simpler. Mark, tough guy, can you say free Hong Kong? Can your players put that on their jerseys? Can you condemn the CCP's concentration camps with 1 million? Can you say anything other than Chairman Mao is beautiful and wise? Yikes. Cuban, finally. Quote, I can say Black Lives Matter. I can say there is systemic racism in this country. I can say there is a pandemic that you have done little to end, Ted. I can say I care about this country first and last. Oh, God. More Cuban. Why is it, at Ted Cruz, that you take such pride in standing up to and speaking truth to the Chinese, but you have no ability, you knew this was coming, to stand up to and speak the truth to at real Donald Trump? Cruz. I agree Black Lives Matter. I agree there is a pandemic and we have taken extraordinary steps to defeat it. Really? Where did that pandemic originate? Why did Communist China cover up the Wuhan outbreak and arrest whistleblowers? And why are you terrified to say one word about China? And it ended there, mercifully. Okay, enough. I'm sending both children to their rooms and grounding them through election night. But I am pleased to report that Cuban's platform, taking a knee during the anthem, was on full and proud display throughout the major leagues for several days and nights, starting in the Bay Area, where Colin Kaepernick launched a national movement 4 years ago. Responsibly wearing a mask in a pandemic, Gabe Kapler, the first-year manager of the San Francisco Giants, joined two of his coaches and several players in kneeling or standing before an exhibition game in Oakland. News reports described African-American players mixing with Caucasians, but simply, these were human beings on a collective mission. This is why the national anthem was written by Francis Scott Key. This is why the national anthem is played before sports events. And this is why, unfortunately, America is divided, starting in the White House, where Trump took in the Giants' gesture and, of course, turned to Twitter, writing, quote, "Looking forward to live sports, but anytime I witness a player kneeling during the national anthem, a sign of great disrespect for our country and our flag, the game is over for me!" Exclamation point. The president posted. Speaking to his team before the game and in previous days, Kapler said each player could decide whether to join him without fear of repercussion.
"I spoke to the group today, and I gave them essentially two messages. The first message was that our coaching staff and our organization would support any statement that they wanted to make. If they kneeled for the anthem, we would support that. If they stood for the anthem, we would support that too. And we wouldn't pass judgment on them for making any statement or standing up for what they believe in or expressing themselves. And the second message I wanted to share was that, you know, what my plans were. And I did that because I wanted them to know that I wasn't pleased with the way our country has handled police brutality. And I told them that I wanted to amplify their voices. And I wanted to amplify the voice of the Black community and marginalized communities as well."
These scenes were unusual for Major League Baseball, an industry with an alarming lack of African-American presence on all levels. A Los Angeles Angels pitcher, Keenan Middleton, knelt and raised his right fist before a game in San Diego, and a night later, Joey Votto joined several Cincinnati Reds teammates in kneeling. Later, we saw scenes across the majors for days. In a social media post, Middleton explained why he knelt alone, quote, "Racism is something I've dealt with my whole life. As a Black man in this country, it is my obligation to want to better the future for generations to come. Over the past few months, I've been out in the community taking part in peaceful protests and having the difficult conversations that are needed for change. Before, pioneers like Jackie Robinson, a Black man, didn't have a voice in the game of baseball. The foundation laid down and sacrifices made by Jackie and others is the reason why I have the platform I do. I will not allow that to go to waste," end quote. Expect these statements to be commonplace before games inside the NBA bubble and whenever the NFL resumes play. Hopefully, the scenes will restore honor and glory to the anthem and the flag. We've already seen that in recent days. So take that, Ted Cruz. Before 2016, the Star-Spangled Banner sometimes seemed like a formality in sports. I have stood at hundreds of games, habitually looking around at faces, athletes, coaches, spectators, and I saw fans who couldn't wait for the music to end and the action to begin. Some players cared enough about their country and faith to close their eyes, but others grew fidgety, they swayed back and forth, they smiled. I even saw broadcast networks such as Fox exploit the anthem as a blatant attempt to pump patriotism. Then came Colin Kaepernick. Now, we have these nights in baseball nobody saw coming. Rather than make a folly of Francis Scott Key, the social media warriors should stop pounding their devices and applaud what's happening in Major League Baseball and across sports. That includes you, Ted Cruz, and you, Donald Trump. Now it's time for The Buzz, our regular deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, I have been saying this since March the 11th. Why would sports continue to march on through a pandemic? You have tried to defend the idea of sports marching on. I believe your theory has been there's too much money here for it not to work. Well, already, MLB, it's not working. I give you the floor, Chris.
You know, Jay, I feel like you got to work really hard and you got to be really dumb to have 14 test positive on one team a few days into the season. I mean, you got to just be completely clueless, right? You got to not take any protocols, no safety, just be completely moronic. You and I have shared, we have met during this pandemic. We have had cocktails. We have had conversation for, I believe, over an hour. We wore our masks. We were outside. We took precautions. Is it that difficult? Is it really that difficult? I was on the player's side, as you pointed out, because I believed that sports was important. It's important for my business. And people enjoyed watching it. We see that by the ratings. But this just is a complete disconnect. And it's a complete disconnect, not shocking, that is in Major League Baseball that has seemed to be disconnected from common sense for, what, 20 years? As they have drifted and drifted as a sport that is not as popular as the other sports in this country. Somehow, let's count it off, soccer across the world, the KBO, in this country, lacrosse, I believe it's the PLL, I think, Major League Soccer, MLS, NBA, training, in bubbles, playing games. We see zero positive test. And if somebody is positive, we're looking at a single digit. That person is taken care of. We have Lou Williams being a moron, wanting to go to Magic City. He's going to be taken care of. And I guarantee you, yes, he's being put back in quarantine. I don't know if he's going to be fined. But the wrath that he's going to feel from his fellow players, I think, will be more than all that. And that's what we got to hope for, right? Is that if baseball can somehow continue, which I, at this moment, I feel very unlikely for all the reasons you pointed out, which are common sense, that these players now will take this seriously. And really, from a business standpoint, this has to be a warning shot to the NFL that wants to try to do this without any sort of bubble setup. You got to do something. You got to do something to simply limit, because I don't think that, listen, I don't think that this is happening. I don't think players are getting COVID from playing baseball on the field. They're obviously going out. They're obviously socializing with people that have it in order to spread it like this. We didn't just wake up one day and 14 people within, you know, it didn't exist on the baseball field and the COVID monster got them at second base. No, they did something in order to come in contact with this, which normal human beings, you and me, we're trying to avoid coming in contact with this. How are they not? That's the problem. And it's really remarkable how idiotic multi-million dollar athletes are that are playing so they can make money. Because again, as we've talked about, as I've said, in a perfect world, if money wasn't on the table, we wouldn't be playing sports. This is obviously for money. So you would think that they would take it a little bit seriously.
Chris, is it not plainly obvious how much fans are missed, how vital they were to the live sports experience, and that we no longer should take them for granted after watching the creepy, silent events of the last few days and nights in barren ballparks?
Well, it's funny. You know, Dodger games, when I watched the first few scrimmage exhibition games, with the cardboard cutouts behind home plate, it really didn't seem like it was, I wasn't missing that much. You know, the crowd noise coming in, the crowd, the cardboard cutouts behind home plate, the Dodgers seemed to do it right. And then as I watched other games across opening weekend, you're absolutely right. It was eerie to see no fans behind home plate. I don't understand why they didn't just try to do the cardboard cutouts everywhere. It looks magically better. And again, this is just another point of baseball. How is there not an edict from the commissioner to every team? Hey, I mean, the Dodgers are charging to get your cardboard cutout there, so there's some revenue, not a lot, but some revenue involved. Put cardboard cutouts behind home plate. It'll make it look better. You got the crowd noise, fine. The virtual fan thing, I think that could be useful. It's more the aesthetics of being able to see something behind home plate. Seeing empty, like on Friday night, I was watching, or ESPN was, you know, doing cut-ins to all the games. And to see an empty Minute Maid Park, which is a beautiful ballpark in Houston, Friday night, the lights are on. There's just nobody behind home plate. There's nothing for me to concentrate my vision on. It looks eerie. It looks creepy. And it's dumb. How hard is it to put cardboard cutouts? I mean, for the Astros, just put trash cans back there.
And Chris, are you able to appreciate sports even though we are watching through the most unique lens in American history?
I appreciated watching baseball. I got bored after 2 days of watching a lot of games. Baseball is still boring. And it's very boring when it's the only thing on. But I enjoyed the NBA games. I was really impressed by how they made, you know, for the Lakers, those are the games I've watched. Watching how they made the court look, the energy, the excitement, the video screens in the back. I don't know if I need your virtual fan point is on. I don't know if I need virtual fans cheering, but whatever. I thought the NBA had done a really good job. So I've enjoyed it. It has been, you know, I've enjoyed sports since golf came back, watching golf events. The gallery not being there hasn't really impacted my viewing experience. It's noticeable, like I just mentioned, in baseball, the lack of fans. It's nine innings. It's a long game. It's a boring game. So that isn't completely surprising that it's more noticeable there.
And Chris, what was your takeaway on the various Black Lives Matter tributes, especially in light of the violence over the weekend?
My first thought on opening day when baseball did it, where there was the kneeling in honor of BLM, and then everybody stood, mostly everybody stood for the national anthem, and you had a few players like Mookie Betts kneeling during the national anthem, and then, of course, people, you know, his fellow players putting their arms on his shoulders. I thought it was a powerful moment. I don't have an issue with people kneeling for the national anthem. It doesn't burn me up like others, which I think others, it's a fake outrage. It's a fake outrage that then becomes a political outrage. And to me, seeing the BLM logo on the pitching mound, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't provoke this venom that so many people are provoked by. I'm not provoked. Listen, if you and I were at a baseball game and the national anthem comes on and I stand and you don't, I don't think less of you. That's your opinion. That's the whole point. Like, to your point, this is the whole opinion of this country, is you have the right to do that. Professional athletes don't have to follow suit. I think that it's easier just to get rid of the anthem, but we know that that'll create another firestorm. So I thought they've handled it as best as possible. You've seen in the NBA, it's on the court. The NFL is going to be the flashpoint if we have an NFL season, because that's always been the flashpoint since the beginning.
And Chris, Lou Williams, what is the man thinking? Is this an example of what will continue to happen when NBA players in their 20s and their 30s are isolated in a bubble at Disney World with only a few of them having a chance to win a championship? Aren't they going to have cabin fever, get the itch? They need to go out. They need to socialize. They need to pick up women. They need to be with women. Will the bubble, Chris, inevitably burst because of COVIDiots?
I don't think it'll bust for NBA, and here's why. Because it's sort of the Michael Jordan theory. His fellow teammates were more scared about disappointing him than not winning. They didn't want to have to deal with Jordan's wrath. I don't think people want to deal with LeBron's wrath. I don't think people want to be that. You know, I think Lou Williams is going to be thought of as a moron within his locker room, and he will have to deal with his fellow players disciplining him, coming down on him. I think the NBA realizes that this is their opportunity, especially if baseball can't get their act together, to be on a center stage with such... I mean, Thursday night, when the NBA season opens, the magnitude of that will be huge. And the magnitude of somebody like LeBron James getting to come back to sports. I think another problem with this is baseball, we don't have those mega stars. We've talked about this. Mike Trout, just hearing him speak the last few weeks, now that he's actually opening his mouth, has been surprising. I didn't know what he sounded like. So I think NBA can avoid this because they do have a bubble in place. And somebody like Lou Williams, who's outside the bubble, who's an idiot, he's going to be pointed out. He's going to be targeted. He's going to be, you know, re-quarantined. And also he's going to have to deal with the wrath of his teammates. I think that's what's different. Obviously, baseball didn't have that in place. So you had 14 idiots come in contact with a virus, a respiratory virus that is easily transferable.
And finally, Chris, your take on Fox's virtual fans.
My take is whatever. I mentioned the cardboard cutouts. It helps the viewing experience. Virtual fans, it's fine. I'm not so hung up on, oh my God, it's horrible. Is it a little creepy? Sure. But they're trying their best to make the viewing experience something that we're used to and accustomed to. And I give them credit for that. To me, I don't think you need to go through so much work to create virtual fans. Just put a few cutouts behind home plate so it doesn't look so damn empty. We don't want damn empty, Jay.
Okay, thank you, Chris.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
I will keep this brief. Yes, I was blown away by the tributes to Black Lives Matter in ballparks across the country. I also would like to see tributes to the men and the women risking their lives on the front lines of the COVID-19 crisis. I realize this is a deeply political time in this country's history, but a pandemic is a life and death situation. It's time for sports and leagues and broadcast networks to spend valuable time saluting this mission, the challenge of keeping people alive as so many continue to die. That's our show, thanks to Mac Miller, no longer with us, for his musical contribution in the show Open. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.
Right through me, don't you understand?